Montreal.
For CJLO News, I'm Zach Jutra. Refugee and migrant support groups are calling on the federal government to withdraw their proposed border security and immigration law. The law will make changes for those seeking asylum in Canada. Bill C-12 has passed its reading in the House of Commons and now has been given to Senate to be revised. Louis-Philippe Janal, the Protection Component Coordinator at the Consultative Committee of Organizations Serving Refugees and Immigrants, or the TCRI, hopes senators will take recommendations from groups like the TCRI.
We've been contacting senators to talk with them about our concerns with the bill, so we're hopeful that there's going to be a thorough study at the Senate level and hopefully some amendments that will lessen the impact of Bill C-12.
Cécile Collotte, the detention coordinator at Action Refugee Montreal, says the law will create restrictions on freedoms for refugees and migrants while also creating a fear for those already here.
It will definitely restrain, like I was saying, their freedom of speech, not just speech, but like opinion and being involved in all sorts of social or political events. It will definitely create a fear. It's also related to, for example, the people that are already in the country. It will create like a fear regarding the loss of their status if they do have one, the possibility of being expelled, the fear of detention as well, and the surveillance that will definitely be higher.
Peggy Nkunda-Nodana was refused asylum in 2022 after waiting over 3 years for her answer. She and her family were given precarious status, meaning they could work and go to school, but were not permanent residents. She has since applied for a permanent residency under humanitarian grounds. Waiting for her results, she says she could be deported at any time with no real protections. At an event to discuss the impact of the law, she said after 7 years in Canada, she fears losing everything.
S'il vous plaît, ça fait 7 ans qu'on est là.
Please, we have been here for 7 years. We're integrated. Please revise the law. Once again, think about human beings, because we don't want to go backwards, we want to go forward. Canada is known to be a very humane country towards others.
Par rapport à d'autres.
The bill introduces new support for law enforcement officers. The government says the changes will keep Canadians safe. The National Police Federation, that represents 20,000 RCMP members, says the updates, quote, reflect long-standing calls from law enforcement agencies and the NPF to modernize Canada's policing and intelligence. Collette believes the changes are not about protecting Canada, but rather giving more power to law enforcement and government agencies. She says the effects of new powers will fall on all Canadians.
It has nothing to do with security, because what they're saying is that this bill is about Canada's security, right? However, migrants do not pose any threat on security, in security, so it shouldn't be included in that. What they're trying to say is that migrants equals danger. When it comes to diminishing the rights of migrants, it's also diminishing the rights of every other person, every other Canadian, because, of course, the restrictions apply to everyone, and the sharing of information between agencies also applies to Canadians.
The federal government initially proposed Bill C-2 in June, a law also labeled to improve Canada's border and immigration policies. That law faced controversy over Canadians' privacy. Bill C-12 was introduced in its place with changes to privacy concerns, but everything on immigration and refugees remained the same. For more, go to cjlo.com/news or follow CJLO on Spotify.
Welcome back, everyone. Happy Sunday. This is Love Actually Needs Work, and I'm really happy you're here. Whether you found this show accidentally, on purpose, or because you emotionally spiral and hit play on anything that sounds like it might fix you, you are in the right place, I swear. And today's episode is called Love is a Political Act, which sounds intense. I know. It sounds like I'm about to yell at you about taxes and then ruin your favorite rom-com, but I swear, don't panic. I'm not here to take away your comfort movies. I am, however, here to gently tap you on the shoulder and say love is way deeper, weirder, and more serious than we actually give it credit for. And when I say political, I don't always mean election signs or arguing with relatives at Thanksgiving. I mean power, right? Who has it? Who doesn't? Who gets to love freely and who has to love quietly, nervously, carefully, or not even at all? Because whether we admit it or not, love doesn't just happen to us, it happens inside of a system, right? And sometimes that system makes it really hard to love without losing pieces of yourself along the way. So today, we're going to be talking about romance, but we're also going to be talking about money, gender, culture, class, trauma, capitalism, you know, all the light stuff, basically. So grab a drink, get comfortable, and we're going to ruin love in the most loving way possible, but not actually ruin it. So people, I want to start with this because I feel like people usually talk about love like it's something that just happens, right? Like a chemical reaction in the brain or some accidental spark that you trip into one night and then you spend the rest of your life trying to chase again. Love has, I think in the last, you know, couple decades at least, really become marketed as luck, as fate, as a surprise even. You're never really told to prepare for it. You're never given a manual or a toolkit. You're just told it will arrive eventually, fully formed, and operate completely on its own, like some kind of emotional autopilot system, if you will. And love is staying present when you're mad, you know? Love is showing up when you're tired, because love isn't just a feeling, it's work. Hence the name of the show, Love Actually Needs Work, because it really does. And love is a verb, right? It's not just a sensation. It's an action. It's not how hard your heart beats when everything is easy. It's how steady your hands stay when things actually begin to fall apart. And before we even touch on the politics of it, we really have to say this clearly, that love is labor. People don't like that word because it makes romance sound boring or mechanical. But the truth is that love takes work because people are not simple, right? You can adore someone deeply, but you can also still disagree with them. You can love someone fully and still hurt them. You can want someone with your whole body and still struggle to connect to their mind. There is nothing low effort about loving another human being. If anything, the deeper the love, the more complicated the work actually becomes. And some people tend to glide into relationships like they were born knowing how romance works. They date easily, they flirt comfortably, they break up without internal destruction, and they move on without rewriting their entire personality, right? Their love stories sound like anecdotes. They're light, they're shareable, they're kind of funny a little bit. And they meet someone while ordering like a coffee, and then they end up married. Like it's just something that happens between oat milk and a receipt. And those stories, trust me, I get it. They can feel magical, right? Unless you're someone that doesn't actually experience love that way, which for most people, that's just not the case. Other people, they approach relationships, I kind of want to say almost like a bomb squad, like very like carefully, quietly. They watch for signs. They're trying not to step the wrong way. Love is not automatic for them, right? It's strategic, if anything. It's something that they negotiate internally before they actually allow themselves to feel it out loud. And some people don't flirt. They investigate, right? Some people don't fall in love. They brace themselves for it like a storm they already know isn't going to be gentle. And that difference doesn't always just stem from your personality alone. A lot of the time it comes from the experience that you've had. So it comes from how safe you've been in your body. It comes from whether you've ever learned that love might cost you something, your community, your stability, your reputation, your safety. You know, and some people grow up believing that love is guaranteed, but others grow up learning that it can be taken away very easily. And that changes how you hold love. Some people hold love like water in their hands and others hold it like glass. And it's all really just a product of the way that we grew up and the way that we experience things in life. But I think what bothers me the most is that nobody actually talks about the moment when love stops being romantic and starts being administrative. You know, when liking someone kind of turns into paperwork, or like attraction becomes logistics, when the us turns into forms and applications and signatures and blah, blah, blah. You know, no one puts that in movies because no one wants to watch that, right? The endless waiting rooms, the policy rules, the documents that decide whether your relationship is real in the eyes of the institutions that have literally never met you. Love gets entangled with the system the moment you share a home, the moment you share finances and responsibilities, right? So like, let's focus in on marriage for a second. marriage turns affection into a contract in a lot of ways, right? Moving in together can sometimes turn your intimacy into bills, right? Breakups aren't just emotional, especially when you're, you know, getting divorced. They're legal, they're financial, and they're sometimes dangerous. And if your love is not recognized, let's say like socially or legally, every part of your life starts to become harder. Rent, healthcare, immigration, hospital visitations, XYZ, even grief kind of becomes more complicated. When the world doesn't officially acknowledge what you've actually lost, you know, we love to say love conquers all. I swear I hear this all the time, but love actually doesn't conquer systems. It has to survive them. And I think that's a big distinction that we need to make, you know, between like conquering or like living and then just surviving something. And when your relationship isn't protected, it is constantly under pressure, right? Love feels lighter when it has rights. Love feels heavier when it has to justify its own existence. It is not the same to love freely as it is to love without protection. And pretending otherwise, it only hides the reality that some people have to fight just to be allowed intimacy at all. And when you have to do that for so, so long, it becomes heavy on your soul, right? Speaking of heavy, we're going to jump into a song by Kiana Lede. And her song is called Heavy, ironically enough. It's a beautiful song. I think she came out with it like 8 or 9 years ago now. And it kind of centers around her personal struggles with anxiety and depression and the difficulty of practicing self-love, which is also, you know, we talk about it a lot on this show, romantic love and even sometimes like platonic love. But I think what I don't touch on too much, and I want to do this more going forward, is actually like self-love. And so this song is deeply introspective. And although it doesn't have a direct political message, I think it can be read that way. And it really dives into the themes of vulnerability and, you know, mental health and love and self-worth and all of these different things. So without further ado, we're going to jump straight into Heavy by Kiana Lede.
I don't got my priorities straight. Don't know who I'm gonna be today. I'm no victim, but I deal with this on the daily. Something pulling, I can't get away. Never living outside of my head. I don't like showing weakness, so I always fake it. Maybe someday I will gain composure. Maybe when I'm older. I'm scared, I'm scared, I'm scared. Cause something feels like it's weighing me down. It takes control, turns my faith into doubt. Even when it's all working out, I'm on my feet, then I pull out the ground. So heavy. And when you leave, damn, I feel needy. I just can't take it. If it ain't you who love me when I'm naked. All my problems, wish I could solve them. Don't feel that, don't feel that, don't feel that way, baby. I can't get up in the morning, it's too hot if I eat. Try it. You ain't here to tell me. Turn my anxiety into excitement. Maybe one day I will gain composure. Maybe when I'm older. I'm scared, I'm scared, I'm scared. Cause something feels like it's weighing me down. It takes control, it turns my faith into doubt. Feel like nothing's right. If you got
nowhere to run. If there was, I'd have been there. You take yourself with you. You can't run from yourself, fool. You can't go down to the neighbor's house. You can't run. You need to confront what's going on in your own house. You have to confront it.
Dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Blue. Crossover Comics. Sharing your passion since 2012.
For the best new music from around the globe, with a respectful nod to the musical pioneers of the past and a whole lot more, join me, Danny Payne, on The Pressure Drop every Monday at 5 on CGLO 1690 AM or CGLO.com.
My name is Jane Penny, and you're listening to CJLO 1690 AM.
Messages, messages, I've been getting messages all night.
All right, guys, we're back. And I want to dive into types right now. Everyone has a type, right? Everyone jokes about having this, like, quote-unquote type. Like, it's just a silly preference that you were born with. Brunettes, tattoos, quiet, funny, older, mysterious, blah, blah, blah. But what if your type wasn't just created, you know, from nowhere, right? What if it was designed while you weren't looking? It was written into all the stories you consume before you understood what desire even meant. Movies, shows, music videos, even fairy tales. Those things taught you who gets to be wanted long before anyone ever wanted you romantically. And if you think about who you rarely saw as the love interest growing up, you know, who was missing from the screen, who never got the soft lighting, the slow music, the tragic romance arc. I was talking about this the other day with my mom, actually, because I'm sure you guys have heard of Rebel Wilson. Obviously iconic, amazing actress, lovely, lovely singer. And for most of her acting career, she just took on these kind of, she was typecasted more so, in these very, like, you know, quote-unquote fat best friend, like, silly, goofy fat best friend, like, roles. That was all she was ever cast in, because she was, you know, larger bodied. And then, I'm sure you guys heard, like, gosh, it's probably, like at the beginning of this year, months and months ago now, but she went through a pretty dramatic weight loss. And she looks amazing. She looked amazing before. She looks amazing now, but she just recently came out with a Christmas movie. God, I think it's called Tinseltown. It's on Prime. Really good, by the way. You guys should go watch it. But she is like the main, love interest for this movie. She's not like, you know, the goofy, like, side chick anymore. She's not, like, the best friend that never gets noticed. You know, she's not, like, a food-obsessed character. She was, for once, we got to see her as this very, like, beautiful and, like, you know, desired lead character. And I just think it's interesting that now people are, like, casting her in those roles and they're seeing her in that way, just because she has extra or less weight on her than she did before. And if we look back to, you know, like, I can remember the kind of guys that I saw in, like, the rom-coms that I would watch or even, like, the fairy tale books that I would read. And they were always, like, tall, muscular, you know, usually, like, darker features. And that was kind of the vision that I saw for myself. I was like, oh, I must date a man like this, because they all look like this and these are the only people that are desirable, because that's everything that I was consuming was telling me that. And that was my type for like a very long time, until I, like, you know, started living in the real world a little bit and, you know, met different men. And then suddenly it's like, oh, actually, like, my type looks nothing like that. anymore. Like, my type is somebody who is, like, actually a little bit shorter and, like, maybe has a kind of dad bod and, like, some tattoos and whatever. Like, it's, you know what I mean? And I think it's interesting how our quote-unquote type, this type that we, some of us have for a very long time in our lives, it will, you know, ambiguously change over the course of our lives just because we're experiencing reality more than this manufactured images that we receive as we grow up. And, you know, when you don't see people like yourself being loved publicly in the media, right, whether that be through books or TV shows or movies or music videos or whatever, it changes what you believe is possible privately to yourself, right? And when nobody who looks like you gets chosen in these stories, you don't grow up assuming that you'll be chosen either. And what happens then is you don't actually grow into dating. You grow into this quote-unquote auditioning, if that makes sense. You know, love becomes a performance review instead of a connection. You don't ask, do I like them? You're just always asking, like, am I good enough for them? And that shift doesn't come just from insecurity alone. It comes from invisibility, right? From stories that never told you you were allowed to be the main character of your own romance. And I think a lot of us maybe don't acknowledge this visibility, or maybe we do acknowledge it, but just not out loud. And I think it's important to acknowledge that visibility in all aspects of the media sector are extremely important, you know, whether that be for love or various other reasons. People need to see themselves represented in order to feel like certain things are possible for themselves. Obviously, someone can get to the point in their life where they're like, this is possible without seeing it represented on a screen. But it's a little bit more challenging, I think. And so we could just bypass a lot of the difficulty if we made representation a little bit broader. And I think on this topic of, you know, performance in love, right? It's important that we also acknowledge, like, the differences in gender and how that kind of trained us poorly for our intimacy, right? Boys were taught, traditionally speaking, to be quiet with their feelings and loud with their achievement. And girls were taught to be emotionally fluent, but just personally exhausted, right? Masculinity has always been framed as this kind of thing of control. And traditionally, femininity is always framed as a service to someone. And then when we drop these, you know, preconceived notions of these people into relationships, and we just wondered why no one knew what to do, right? Like, men were rarely given emotional vocabulary. Women were given too much responsibility for emotional outcomes. So one side is, like, struggling to express their feelings, and the other is, like, struggling to stop carrying them so much. And then suddenly relationships feel unbalanced, not because people don't care, but because they were never trained to show care in the same language. And we didn't just receive bad dating advice, we received emotional conditioning. Entire generations were taught how to endure relationships instead of actually participating in them. You know, we were taught how to survive love, not how to communicate inside of it. And you don't undo that overnight. Unfortunately, you have to unlearn it, sometimes painfully, sometimes awkwardly, and usually in the middle of hurting someone that you didn't actually mean to hurt. But regardless, it's a big part of love, right? And love didn't just become confusing on its own. I think a big part of the reason that love became so confusing was because it got so commercialized. You know, at some point, romance stopped being about connection, and it just started being about consumption. We're encouraged to buy our way into desirability, to upgrade ourselves constantly, to look smoother, younger, shinier, more impressive. You know, dating became a form of marketing. Profiles are advertisements, bios are sales pitches, pictures are branding strategies. And somewhere along the way, people stopped asking who makes me feel safe and started asking who makes me look good. And you know what? Even I am guilty of this at certain points in my life. But I think once you become self-aware enough to take a look at the situation for what it is and step back and go, whoa, that's actually insane that this is happening, that's when the change starts to occur, right? Because dating apps, they didn't invent loneliness, obviously, but they certainly monetized it. swiping gives you the illusion of abundance while actually starving you of depth. It trains your brain to skim instead of stay. It teaches you to judge within seconds and discard within moments. People have become so easily disposable to one another nowadays. And it's actually kind of sad because on dating apps, on social media, people have so many options just lined up right in front of them. So it's so easy that if, you know, one small little error or problem pops up with one person, they can just disregard it and go to the next. And so people have then become these kind of disposable objects for others. And that's why so many people are just emotionally stunted. And we won't get on that because that's a whole other topic in itself. But I do want to say that this habit of like discarding someone doesn't actually turn off when you match. Now it starts following people into relationships. You know, you start to wonder if you could do better. Not because you're even unhappy, but because you've been conditioned to always believe that something better must exist one swipe away. Capitalism thrives on dissatisfaction, right? It works best when you're not fulfilled, not secure, and not settled. And listen, there's a time and there's a place for capitalism in this world. Love is not one of those times or places. And a person in love and at peace is not a great customer. A person who feels disposable, though, will spend endlessly trying to feel chosen. So the system benefits from your self-doubt. It benefits when you think love should be optimized, when you think people are replaceable, when connection almost feels transactional, and when intimacy feels like a poor return on investment, right? Capitalism didn't ruin love. It just convinced you it was a product. And with that being said, we're going to head on into Transform by a lovely, lovely Ontario artist, Daniel Caesar. This song, I heard it when it first came out, and then for some reason, it just flew out of my brain, and I rediscovered it the other day. And I don't think that this song got as much, how do I say this? It didn't get, like, people didn't care as much about the song as I think they should have. This song was really about, you know, this kind of internal struggle between one's innate nature and the desire to change for the sake of like a loving relationship. And it explores a lot of the themes surrounding like self-acceptance and the limits of unconditional love. And although the song is not like an explicit political commentary, I think what's interesting is this comes from his album called Freudium. And so all the songs on this album are deeply personal and very psychological. And they explore like the dynamics of a relationship through a psychoanalytical lens. So there are politics in this song, but I think they're like interpersonal politics. So anyways, without further ado, we're going to jump straight into Transform by Daniel Caesar featuring Charlotte Day Wilson.
How can I change what I've got? Transform. Transform, transform, transform. We don't punish the tiger for catching his prey. So how am I the one to blame? Fits in my nature. Transform, transform, transform. And I don't know why fight it. The least I could do is try. The ego's in the way. I know that you feel mad today, but that anger will fade away. And you'll wish she was here. It's never over until life ends. Lay down beside me, do it again. It's never over until life ends. Yeah, lay down beside.
Whoa. And don't be a fool.
right, guys, that was Transform by Daniel Caesar featuring Charlotte Day Wilson. We're going to jump right back in to, I want to talk about money. I mean, I want to talk about money in the context of love and relationships, because people don't talk about it because it's a touchy subject and people don't want to get into it, but we're going to get into it today. We don't talk enough about the fact that love is easier when you have money. I don't care if it's a hot take. I don't care if people agree with it. I'm just going to say it because it's true. It sounds shallow, but it's accurate. You know, money does not make relationships perfect. That's not what I'm saying. But it does make them lighter, right? It cushions conflict. It gives people room to breathe. It makes mistakes less dangerous. And the absence of money, that just makes everything louder. Fear gets louder. Arguments get heavier. Choices get smaller. And breakups, they hurt differently when you're broke, especially divorces, right? A heartache is harder when you're like one bad month away from eviction. When rent is late, romance does not feel poetic. It feels irresponsible because you could be focusing on so many other things, right? And you can't heal fully when you're also just trying to survive. You can't nurture a connection when you're literally exhausted, scared, and endlessly calculating how to make it until the end of the month without breaking down. And realistically, that's what at least 80% of our economy looks like right now. And when people say, oh, but love should be enough, what they usually mean is love should function like money, but it doesn't, and it can't. Love cannot pay your bills. Love cannot lower interest rates. Love cannot make your boss kinder. And pretending that love alone is enough only hurts people who are already caring too much. Love flourishes best where life isn't crushing you daily. And this can apply to money. This can apply to anything else that is like weighing you down emotionally so bad that you can't focus on a relationship. But unfortunately, money is usually the winner in this game. And it's one of the more popular things that people struggle with because our economy is not great right now, right? But love is also not universal. And the way that we practice it today is not ancient or instinctual. It's almost inherited, right? And now I'm not usually one to talk about like colonialism. But I do want to acknowledge the impacts that it has had on the way that we love, right? So obviously, colonization invaded land. It also altered a lot of aspects of identity, gender, family structure, and intimacy. And entire cultures had different understandings of partnership before these Western frameworks flatten them into marriages based on ownership, property, rigid roles, right? Love used to be communal in many places, and now it's a little nuclear, right? Indigenous communities, for example, had systems of shared care long before individualism taught us to suffer alone. Gender used to be expansive before colonization, you know, punished fluidity. And obviously, we're, you know, trying desperately to get back to these roots, and definitely we're seeing progress nowadays. But it doesn't take away from the fact that it did happen, and it did alter the way that a lot of things were perceived, right? And colonization, I think more than anything that I want to touch on, it introduced hierarchy into intimacy, right? So men over women, heterosexual over queer, ownership over partnership. And obviously, I'm sure we can trace things back to even before colonialism, where there maybe these dynamics existed. So I'm not necessarily saying that colonialism started these dynamics, but it most definitely strengthened them, if that makes sense. And we love today, inside versions of relationships, that kind of weren't built for us. And when they don't fit, we blame ourselves instead of the structure. You know, we feel broken for wanting something different. But what if nothing's actually wrong with you? What if what's broken is just the model that we were all handed, right? And I think a big part of that is like intercultural love, right? Intercultural love is beautiful, but it's also not easy, right? You don't just fall in love with a person. You fall into a whole world that you're not really a part of in a lot of ways, right? Languages shift, holidays change, humor doesn't land the same way. You learn new customs and unlearn old assumptions, and love becomes this kind of translation. You know, as an Anglophone who's not from Quebec, when I moved here, obviously a lot of the men that I dated were like French. They were French. Some of them were like from Italy, Greece, like not Canada. And a lot of the language, like there was a massive language barrier. A lot of it got lost in translation. Cracking jokes, like I just said, didn't land the same way. In fact, some people got offended by certain jokes that were said just because they didn't understand what was happening. And you have to put yourself into a position where you're learning all these new customs and you have to unlearn all these old assumptions. And love becomes this form of translation. And when you love across difference, you have to explain yourself constantly, you know, so for clarification, if anything. And sometimes it can be tiring to act as this kind of cultural representative instead of just a person. And sometimes you wish you could just exist without context or footnotes and without history pressing itself into conversation after conversation. And I want to be very clear, none of this is failure. It's just friction, right? Which can be fire, or it could also be exhaustion, depending on how gently you hold each other with it. But love across difference is not about sameness. It's about respect, right? So it's about listening without trying to fix. It's about curiosity instead of control. And it works when both people keep choosing to learn, not dominate. But that choice is a hard one to consciously make sometimes. And most relationships don't necessarily die because the love between people actually disappears, whether that's intercultural or otherwise. They die because life just becomes kind of like unlivable sometimes. It goes back to what I was talking, you know, about before with the money, right? Sometimes stress piles up, work drains you, bills are swallowing your attention, anxiety is consuming your sleep. And it's not that you stop caring about the person you're with, but you just actually stop functioning for a while. Because love requires energy, attention, emotional availability. And when you don't have those, affection withers very quietly, but very quickly. And it's not because the connection isn't there, but it's because you're too tired to reach for it and to maintain it. Burnout ends more relationships than betrayal ever will. I just want to put that out there. And people often, not all the time, but they often will walk away, not because they fall out of love, but just because they fall out of themselves, right? Love didn't fail you. Life just didn't give you time to rest at all. And I think that's probably rings true for a lot of people. But we live in an era where love has an audience, right? Especially in this age of like social media and digitization, every relationship comes with potential branding. Dates are photo shoots, partnerships are content, even grief is curated. You don't post your worst days, you post your aesthetic ones, right? And when we circle back to this idea of performing love, you also need to keep in mind that you stop experiencing it. You start seeing your relationship through the eyes of strangers. You compare, you measure. You wonder whether your partner loves you enough to make life look good. And no relationship survives that pressure and touch. Love is not designed to be polished. It is designed to be messy, boring, inconsistent, and like ultimately just human, because that's what the human experience is, right? And the longer you treat it like a highlight reel, the more disconnected you become from the truth that actually is underneath it. So with that being said, because I'm getting a little fired up on that topic, and speaking of this fiery energy, we're going to dive right into Mad by Solange featuring Lil Wayne. So this song, I mean, obviously Solange, iconic, powerhouse vocals, and this song specifically is about validating Black anger and challenging this angry Black woman stereotype that circulates around way too often, while exploring the emotional and psychological toll of systemic racism. You know, it relates to political love very much so by advocating for self-worth, self-care, and community healing, asserting that prioritizing Black humanity and emotional well-being is a form of resistance and love in a world that we often see denying it. So without further ado, we're going to jump straight into Mad by Solange.
cause I just said still owe me bucks. So I got the right to get bucked, but I try not to let it build up. I'm too high, I'm too better, too much. So I let it go, let it go, let it go.
I ran into this girl, she said, why you always blame it? Why you can't just face it? Why you always gotta be so mad?
The crowds, but it's hard when you only got fans around and no fam around. And if they all, then they hands is out and they pointing fingers. When I wear this fucking burden on my back like a motherfucking cap and gown, then I walk up in the bank, pants sagging down, and I laugh at frowns. What they mad about? Cause here come this motherfucker with this mass account that didn't wear a cap and gown. Are you mad cause the judge ain't give me more time? And when I tipped the suicide, I didn't die. I remember how mad I was on that day. Man, you gotta let it go before I get up in the way. Let it go, let it go.
Ran into this girl, she said, why you always say? Can't just face it. Why you always gotta be so mad?
I got a lot to be mad about.
Cinema Public, we offer a theatrical program made up of local films and international new releases, classics and little-known nuggets, as well as short films and family screenings. Our tickets are among the cheapest in Montreal, $10 for a regular entry, or $8 for students, children, and seniors. We also offer 6-ticket movie cards for even more savings. Come see us at Casa d'Italia, just across from John Talon Metro, and visit cinemapublic.ca to discover our programming. Le Cinema Public, for a lively cinema.
Do you want to have a discussion about movies?
Yahoo! You're all clear, kid. Now let's blow this thing and go home.
And have the iconic sounds of cinema?
Well, then tune in to At the Movies every Tuesday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. only on CJLO 1690 a.m. with your hosts,
Remy
and Danny.
May the force be with you. Goodbye, old friend. May the force be with you.
Hey, it's Mint Simon. You're listening to CJ Lowe, 1690 AM.
All right, guys, we're back, and that was Mad by Solange featuring Lil Wayne. Now we're going to jump right back into, I want to talk about softness in the face of radicalization, right? We live in a world that often trains us to be hard before it ever actually teaches us to be kind. We have a stiff upper lip, don't cry, don't depend, don't trust too much, but don't reveal too much, because vulnerability is framed as dangerous, embarrassing, and naive. And strength is framed as emotional distance, as if caring deeply is some kind of liability rather than a form of courage. The truth is, being tender in this world is one of the bravest things that you can actually do. You know, softness is not weakness. Softness means staying open when it would be easier to armor yourself. It means choosing curiosity when judgment would feel more satisfying. It means letting yourself feel something even though you know it could end someday. That kind of emotional risk-taking is not small. It's revolutionary, especially in a culture that rewards self-protection and emotional detachment as intelligence, right? Every time you love without trying to control, every time you forgive when you are not required to, every time you let yourself care in a world that profits from numbness, you are practicing resistance. Gentleness disrupts violence, right? We've seen this historically. And patience disrupts urgency. And love disrupts domination. Softness is not passive, it's defiant. It is you saying, I refuse to become cruel just because the world is. And we treat love like it's just something you do in your bedroom, your kitchen, your heart. But love is public in its consequences. You know, who you love determines where you feel safe walking. Who you love affects how the world treats you. Who you love can decide whether you're welcome at some tables and unwelcome at others, right? Relationships might be personal, but intimacy is never isolated from power. Love shapes your access, your safety, your social position, and it always has. Marriage once decided whether you could own property, vote, work, travel, inherit, and dating still influences your housing, your finances, your mental health, your immigration status, your medical decisions. Love might feel private, but it is always arranged inside systems much larger than the two people involved. And when people dismiss love as just emotions, what they're really saying is they don't want to admit how deeply it affects everything else. Love organizes lives, right? Love reshapes loyalty. Love redraws futures. Politics might not happen in your bedroom, but it decides what happens outside of your door. And when you choose to care in a world that benefits from apathy, that choice matters. Love teaches you how to see other people, not as competition, not as content, not as tools, but as human beings with entire worlds inside of them. And that alone is revolutionary in a culture that encourages consumption instead of connection. Love makes you more accountable. It forces you to confront your patterns, your blind spots, your inherited beliefs. Love challenges you to ask how power shows up in your desires, in your silence, in your expectations. And you don't just love with your heart, you love with your values, right? With your history, with what you've been taught and what you refuse to repeat. Loving consciously is inherently political because it pushes back on domination. It teaches cooperation where the world encourages conquest. It teaches responsibility where the world encourages abandonment. And it teaches repair where the world encourages replacement, because to love well in this world is unfortunately to disagree with a lot of it. Nobody loves right all the time. There is no ethical purity test for relationships. You will hurt people by accident. You will misunderstand. You will get tired. You will choose wrong sometimes. And loving better does not mean loving flawlessly. It means loving honestly, responsibly, and with the willingness to grow, right? Loving better means listening without waiting to speak. It means apologizing without defending yourself. And it means respecting boundaries even when they frustrate you. Because you need to understand feelings. And understanding feelings do not entitle you to someone else's body, time, or labor. But it means learning that love is not demonstrated by how much you consume someone, but by how carefully you treat them. And loving better also means leaving when you cannot love safely, right? Staying is not always the most loving thing. Sometimes walking away is the first act of respect for yourself and the other person. Love does not mean enduring harm. Love means refusing to build intimacy on top of damage. And just like that, guys, we have reached the emotional end credits of today's episode. If your brain hurts a little and your heart feels strangely seen, congratulations. That is the official side effect of listening to Love Actually Needs Work. And today we talked about a lot. We talked about love as a social construct, as a political act, and a personal crisis, which honestly feels kind of accurate. And if you're leaving this episode thinking, wow, so my relationship trauma is actually historically significant, then you're welcome. You're no longer just emotionally unavailable. You're culturally complex. And maybe you're going to go to bed tonight thinking about someone you shouldn't. Maybe you're going to open your notes app and write one dramatic sentence like, I fear intimacy is a prison of my own design. Or maybe you're just going to stare at the ceiling in silence like a Victorian child with feelings. All are valid responses. Whatever this episode dug up for you, an old crush, an old version of yourself, or the sudden urge to text someone you absolutely should not, just know that love isn't something you're bad at. You were just never taught how to do it in a world that rewards distance and calls it independence. And listen, if love really is political, then being soft in a hard world is an act of rebellion like we touched on before, right? Caring is like punk. Vulnerability is revolutionary. Crying on public transit is emotionally efficient. So go be gentle. Be dramatic in private and honest out loud. Fall in love slowly, but leave faster when something hurts. And remember, if someone says, I'm not ready for a relationship, it's not a riddle. It's a sentence. And walk away like the powerful, emotionally literate icon you are. So thank you for spending your hour and this part of your life with me today. It's not a small thing. That's connection. That's trust. And I don't take it lightly, even when I make fun of it. This has been Love Actually Needs Work, where we romanticize your healing process and emotionally subtitle your bad decisions. But before we end off the episode tonight, I want to take a second to wrap it up with a song by JMSN called Love Me. This, I didn't know what the song was called. I've been hearing it for a year now on TikTok, and I had no idea what it was called, but I found it for you guys. And it is an introspective and emotionally charged kind of R&B soul track, really talking about the universal like human experience for yearning, for unconditional love, acceptance, and feeling of self-worth, ultimately. It focuses, I think, entirely just on this raw emotional vulnerability. So with that being said, thank you guys for spending your hour with me. And this is Love Bee by JMSN.
Swear you're gonna love me, give you a little honey, make you spend a little money, you don't need it anyway, no. Not for nothing, you know I'ma keep it coming, I'ma keep this party running, you ain't even gotta say no.
Love me, love me, love me,
this is Jesse from Last Stop This Song, and you're listening to